Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Welcome in to one of these years, the Athletic's Detroit Lions podcast. I'm Chris Burke, joined by Nick Baumgartner. Our episode this week presented by BetMGM. I still got to get over to the physical BetMGM sports lounge downtown. I haven't been to any of the casinos. True. Have you been over there?
No, but now that you mention that, I remember actually do you remember when COVID started? Well, everyone always has their different dates of when COVID started, but the week that everyone was pretty sure it was here, that I think was when betting was legalized in the state of Michigan, right? It was that day. It was I remember Brad Galley and some of the TV guys were down there doing stand-ups from the casino. I'm like, guys, that's going to be closed in 12 hours.
Right, yeah.
So,
it's one
everybody go downtown and help those guys because they've probably been feeling it. So, yeah, right. But I should go down there too. That's a good point.
I'd like to go. I always drive past it, drive past the casinos and stuff on my way in for games on Sunday. So, but anyway, Nick's been covering Michigan football pretty heavily these last couple weeks. You should check out his just dropped a feature this morning as we're recording Wednesday morning on Cade McNamara and Jim Harbaugh that you can go check out on theathletic.com. We've got a nice year-end deal running, $24 total for the next 12 months. So get over, check out Nick's feature. I had a Q&A with Hal Vitae and Penei Sewell up this week. I sat down with them last week. It was pretty interesting. They got a pretty good thing going on the right side of that line. It'll be interesting to see what happens with them this offseason. So head over to The Athletic. Make sure you check that out. You can find our show over there ad-free on The Athletic app. And otherwise, we'll get into this. I want to talk about the game a little bit, I guess. We should in Atlanta, the Lions losing at the last minute there. But we had a couple questions. I sort of opened things up for a mailbag. A couple people asked about this, and obviously it just happened last night that John Madden passed away. Mm-hmm. Sort of.
That's right.
I mean, he was 85, I think, but I think it was unexpected. You know, it wasn't.
I don't know if it was imminent, is what people.
Right. And it's sort of hard to have a football show without talking about John Madden. And I was going back through and sort of watching old clips, and I stumbled across the one I saw you tweeted it out, I think, where he said, I only have three rules for my team.
Yeah.
Which was, what was it? Show, be on time.
It's be on time, pay attention. And play like hell when I ask you to. That's it. That's it. That's football, man. That's John Madden was, the more I've thought about it over the years, and it wasn't just, I watched the documentary. I don't know if you've gotten the chance to see the Fox documentary yet or any of the listeners have. But definitely check that out. It was well worth it. I watched it on Christmas night. And then, and the documentary it did such a good job of showing the coach, John Madden, the coach, which is something that people Christianize it. We don't really think about that because I think we were, it was 1979, I think, when he retired from coaching. And all we remember him as is a broadcaster. But long story short, for people our age, this guy taught us football. I have been fortunate to develop a little bit of a friendship with Dan Dierdorf in the years he's been doing Michigan radio. And I always tell Dan, you and Madden were the guys that taught in my high school football coaches.
Right.
But I always tell Dan, you and Madden were the guys that taught me and everybody like me football. And, I think Dan would always joke Madden stole it from him. But the whole idea was, and they showed it in the Madden documentary, when he started doing broadcasting, he didn't want to do it because he thought it was kind of quirky and jokey and ha-ha, whatever. And he wanted it to be serious. And he wanted to take it serious. And there were so many great stories and memories yesterday that I saw shared and so many about, how much, he knew football was fun and he didn't try to take it overly serious. But I think it should be noted, too, that, there's no person in the history of time, probably, that we've known football that was what I would call the game's champion, protector, and whatever else you want to call it. That was John Madden. He was football, in my opinion. And I think I don't think I'm alone. And the video game and everything else touches a lot of other people, but just from a sheer football sense, like, he was it all the way, right? And
yeah,
what a loss, what a loss.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that the thing that always jumped out to me, and I saw a lot of people talking about this last night after the news broke, is just he obviously was one of the greatest football minds of all time and was a great coach, won a Super Bowl, went into the Hall of Fame. And I think the thing that always jumped out is just how accessible he made the game for everyone. Yeah. You know, crazy. Just the way he talked about it. And like, there's certainly room, especially these days, for guys like, you know, Tony Romo, who's like,
yeah,
here's the coverage they're playing, here's the play they're going to run, here's what everyone's assignment is.
Exactly, right, yeah.
Certainly room for that. But Madden, a lot of the joy of Madden was just like, oh, this receiver's open, he hit him, boom. That was the analysis for the play, you know? And it was great every single time.
It was perfect,
you know, there's all these clips out. I tweeted one out, or I retweeted one of him talking about Gatorade buckets at the Super Bowl. There's one of him... Yep. You know, on the Telestrator explaining how an indoor blimp works, like all this stuff, all these little moments of joy.
Oh,
and I'm with you too. You know, I know you played the game up through high school. I never really played at a competitive level, but just thinking back on, I mean, the video game, I think, was so transformative for people with football. Like, even thinking back, I think I was trying to remember the first one I got. I think it was the Madden 94 on Sega.
Sega, yep.
But I just thinking back, and I don't know that you realized at the time, but how much that game taught people about like coverages and
everything,
routes
and everything.
All these things that we talk about all the time now. For me, that's where it started. I would play the game, and then like I'd go watch games on Saturday, and would like diagram plays as I was watching, and it was all because of that. It was all because of that video game.
The first one I ever got was, I think, 95, and it was on the, I think it was actually on Game Gear. It wasn't the Sega Game Gear, remember that? I didn't have a Sega, I had the handheld. Yep. So I think I got that, and then we started getting all of them, you know, from there on out, obviously on, you know, the N64 and whatever else we had. But the thing that I remember most about the video games is, when the PlayStation 2 came out, and I think I was like a junior or senior in high school. So obviously I've been playing football, you know, for a couple of years now competitively at this point. And I think I was a senior because that was when the big jump in graphics, like when the PlayStation 2 came out, it was like, holy shit, this is like watching a TV copy of a game, right? So I remember we would always have like offensive line meetings and stuff on, you know, we'd go eat at somebody's house and play games or whatever. And we would play Madden. And when somebody got the Madden game, we went over to his house the first time. And we're sitting there and we're watching this stuff. And I'm like, we run some of the stuff that is in these plays on the screen right now, gentlemen. Like, it was like, this is all, you know, like what we do when we play football. Like, it was one of those moments that I'll never forget because it was like, this is crazy. This is like an actual, right? And that's what it is. It's a simulation of an actual football game. And Madden has talked over the years about, you know, when EA first came to him about, you know, putting a game together, you know, they talked about how the framing was off and it would be really a lot better and easier for the programmers if you could take the tackles off of the line and maybe the guards too and just have a center. And Madden was like, screw you, I'm out. This is 11 on 11 or nothing. Like, and it was like, I think about that all the time and I'm like, what if he hadn't said that? What if he would have been like, whatever, screw it, put out NFL Blitz, I don't give a shit. How would we think about football today, right? And it's like, that guy with something that we all love so much, and we talk about it on this show so much, that something that we all love so much and none of us really understand, like nobody in history has been able to explain it easier to the masses like John Madden. What a gift. And well, what a loss.
It's a really hard thing to do, I think.
Insanely hard.
Like we do it on a much lower level. But I mean, that's part of
the I wouldn't be doing this job the way I do it, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, same for me. I mean, I think that's always been sort of the first thought in my mind when I write anything, is how do I get the, if someone has never watched a football game, are they going to be able to read this and understand what's happening? And I think that that was, like I said, he just made it so accessible for everyone. You could sit, people would watch, like Thanksgiving games would be sometimes for people the only game they would watch all year, and you could sit down and enjoy it because Madden and Summerall were so good on those calls together.
So good. And that's the thing that's reminded me in this, in the last week or so, and it's unfortunate, obviously, that he passed so close to that documentary. It's almost weird, right? But glad that he was able to see it.
Right, yeah.
With his family. But they did talk about Summerall in there, too, in the combination, you know, the duo. And it got me thinking, like, and Madden said it on the show, I think, or somewhere, like, thing that we forget, like, Summerall was a former player, played in the NFL, like, was a play-by-play guy. How rare of a combination. And I had somebody tweet at me last night, like, Madden and Summerall were, like, the best ever in anything, and we completely, people our age, completely took it for granted at the time.
Yeah, 100, absolutely.
Completely took it for granted. And now you think back, and you're like, oh, my God. When John Madden was at a football game, NFL football game, like, I remember these games.
Oh,
they would send him to, like, a game with, like, a young quarterback coming up. And if Madden said that kid was good or was going somewhere, like, he was going somewhere. And if Madden was like, I don't know if he's ready yet, we were all like, no, he's probably not ready yet. Like, that was, he was like America's football conscience. And we did not disagree with him. Like, Walter Cronkite of football, whatever you want to call it. That was, to me, that was John Madden. And there'll never be another. Absolutely.
Yeah. And now that I'm thinking about it, I think I got the Madden game and, like, Bill Walsh college football right around
that's
the same
good
time.
One too,
and it was pretty similar. Like, the mechanics of it were pretty similar.
Bill Walsh.
Just those another two games, those two guys. But yeah, I mean, the announcer thing is really fascinating because you're right. I mean, if they were there, if they were on the call, it didn't matter who was playing. It felt like a huge game.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was rewatching part of the, 97 Thanksgiving game, I think, just to see the end of it, basically, where he's given out, like, explaining how to carve a turducken and, like, giving out the legs and, like, all this stuff we now always think of.
All the Barry Sanders,
but Summerall
Madden
and
games,
he and Summerall were so perfect together because Summerall was just, like, the professional straight man, you know, like, just he was there to do the call and he let Madden do his thing and they never stepped on each other's toes and it was just. Yeah, you're right. We totally took it for granted.
Yeah, and when it was time to be serious, they were both serious, you know. And it was like, my God, they were just perfect. And you would hear so many imitations, right, over the years. So many guys that would try to be Madden and so many guys that would probably try to be Summerall too, you know, without even realizing it. And it's like it still influences people, but yeah, crazy.
Yes, Brandon Kerr, one of his really enjoy interacting with him on Twitter. It's he's at SFH commish _ one. He tweets me all the time about the Lions and about the show and everything. He asked me this morning on Twitter, you know, like, if are there any comparisons in other sports for John Madden? And so I was trying to think of like Dick Vitale is the one that jumps out to me. I was thinking, like, I don't know if you ever watch, like, my dad always used to watch, like, This Week in Baseball, like Mel Allen. I don't know if you ever watched that.
Yeah,
like,
that was the other
that
one
voice.
I was actually thinking.
I don't know. Like, Vince Scully probably does it for people. It's a sort of a different thing.
Ernie Harwell would be
Ernie
one.
Ernie Harwell
for
around
here.
You know, but again, it's really hard. I mean, I think there are people who, I think there are, especially color commentators, who are really good at sort of bringing the game down to just everyone's level. Like, like Hubie Brown in basketball has always been really good at it. I think Doris Burke's really good at it.
Very good. Both of them, yes.
But
great point.
I don't know that they're, like, transcendent names necessarily. Maybe I'm not giving Hubie Brown enough credit.
Well, I think the difference is, like, it was just so easy for people like Madden and, you know, probably Ernie Harwell and some of these guys too, but, and, you know, someone like Doris Burke. But, like, I think what it is when they tap that, when you tap that vein of being able to relate to everybody, because you're just yourself and you're so unapologetically yourself. Like, that was him. And I think that all those people that you mentioned, like, Hubie Brown is that way too, right? Like, there's no other Hubie Brown. You're not mistaking him for somebody else. Like, you know what I mean?
Right,
like, that's what Belichick said, I think, somewhere. He goes, no other John Madden. He's like, you're not walking up 100 yards away and being like, oh, that might be John Madden, right? Like, that's him. There's no other person. Unmistakable. And I think that those people are the ones that we remember the most because they're themselves and they're the easiest to relate to. And, that's just so natural. I don't think that John Madden probably ever tried to do anything that he did on TV, right? He just did it. And it was just like, and it just happened. And it was like, it was so obvious that that's what it was. And he was so sort of chill with it. And I think that's why he was, I mean, an icon in probably broadcasting, because you think about all of sports broadcasting. I mean, it's influential. He's influential on literally every piece of everything that we do.
Just we'll transition here into football in a second. Just some other sad news from this week that I wanted to mention. Jeff Dickerson, who covers the Bears.
Yes.
Covered the Bears for ESPN. Also passed away on Tuesday night or sometime on Tuesday. And I didn't know Jeff, but I know...
We know people that did.
We know people that did, and I knew him through his work. He's a really, really good beat writer in Chicago, and certainly all the stuff on Twitter, people talking about him, what an incredible guy he was. His wife passed away a couple years ago. He died of cancer. She also died of cancer. They had an 11-year-old son, so it's a really sad, tragic situation, and I've seen a few people... tweet out. I think Adam Schefter actually just retweeted it a few seconds ago.
I was gonna say,
Taro from our company and a few people have tweeted out a GoFundMe for his son. So if you see that around on Twitter and you feel like
And I think Kevin Seifert wrote an obituary on ESPN.com, so it might be there too if you want to check that out.
So yeah, he said, I hate it, you know. John Madden, the John Madden death hit everyone, I think, in the football world pretty hard, but I didn't want to get lost there too, because certainly that a lot of people were feeling that one on Tuesday. So as always, our thoughts and prayers are with all the friends and family there. And so I just wanted to mention that before we move on, and I don't have a great way to transition into Lions Falcons, unfortunately, but we should get there for a few minutes.
This is a football podcast, Chris, and we're going to honor the football people and talk Lions.
Yeah. So, mentioned John Madden this one for us. And
well, they had to play it. I guess that's the thing at this point. And when the game ended, I think we were like, I think I slacked you. I was like, well, it's probably for the best.
Yeah.
You know, when it ended, and it's like, you know, probably for the best. They still have the draft pick in place. I don't think they played, I don't know. I mean, it's one of these things where you got to play the year out. And I think when you look at the rest of the roster, it's another one where St. Brown was still making plays. I think Decker probably played maybe his best game since he's been back, so that was good to see. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, would people have been pissed if they won?
Well, that's what I had a buddy of mine.
Probably.
Yeah. A buddy of mine texted me when the game was over that it was the perfect tank game because he played like all young guys. He played hard like they do every week. It was interesting for 3 hours and then they lost at the end.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, I think it would have been nice for Tim Boyle to get the win.
Yeah.
But
because he was a little better, you know, than the first
he
one.
He was until the,
until the end.
Right. Play at the end that ended the game, which was disastrous for them.
That's true.
Which I thought was interesting too at the end of the game. Like this, I guess it was on Monday's press conference. Dan Campbell said one of his regrets from the game was that he didn't help Boyle out more in that situation, that he didn't, you know, put someone in motion, put the back in motion so he could make it easier to figure out whether it was man or zone, because that was the thing that Boyle said threw him off. It was a man zone read and he read it wrong. He read zone and they were in man, and so that play was supposed to go to the left side where he had Reynolds and St. Brown, and it went over the middle where there were like nine defenders
in the zone. Yeah,
and so Campbell said, you know, I wish I would have given him something to help him out. And I think that that's I don't know, I think it's kind of interesting to hear Campbell make we know he's going to be honest, we know he's going to, it's not surprising to hear him make admissions like that, but I think it is one of the conversations we'll continue to have here over the next couple of weeks is just what this offensive coaching setup is going to look like. And I think we have to remember that Dan Campbell is called, seven NFL games as a play caller now?
Yeah.
And so he's kind of learning on the job here. It's a pretty tough thing to do.
Yeah. And it's also like, it's a tough thing to do with a quarterback like Tim Boyle because, like, you know, and we've all criticized Goff, but you would think that Goff is a guy that with his experience and everything else might not need the extra, you know, motion check or whatever he might be able to make that read a little clearer. It's going to be harder for Campbell with someone like Boyle because the experience is so limited and there's just not a lot there. And he is really, you know, an example of a guy that they signed purely based off of his talent profile, as you saw, and both times he's played. And really, if you watch back to the preseason, you know, you can see when he rips the ball, like it flies off his hand and it whistles. But we don't know where the hell it's going, and sometimes he doesn't know what he's looking at when the play starts. So it's like you've got Campbell trying to kind of go through all this. I think that's probably a good a good exercise for him, though, don't you think? To work with a younger quarterback and sort of see all of the things that might trip up a younger quarterback that needs that help. But I mean, for me, the more I looked at that whole thing, it was like, how much of a conversation are we having now about the quarterback position at large here as they go into the offseason? I know that there was some hubbub yesterday or whatever it was when Campbell got asked on the radio about could Goff be the quarterback forever? And he was like, well, I mean, I guess, you know,
right.
Like, whatever. Like, right. But also, you know, it made me think about, okay, well, you know, that's two starts for Tim Boyle. They haven't exactly been stellar. This hasn't exactly been, you know, an awesome year for him. He got the injury and everything else. They liked him when the year started. I bet they probably still do. But it does make me wonder, you know, you've got the conversation still about Goff. We think that, you know, it makes sense that he'd be here. Not ruling out the possibility of drafting someone still. And I think that not ruling out the possibility of what do you do with Tim Boyle. I think that's still some type of a conversation that maybe we get into deeper, but later. But this game made me think about that a little bit. Just the full quarterback picture, not just Goff, right? But like the full, I don't know. Did you have the same sort of thought when you're out there watching it? Like, is this going to be it again next year? Or is this not enough? I don't know.
I mean, my thought was that I'd prefer it not be this next year, I guess.
Exactly. You know, I prefer another look, someone
right.
else.
Boyle's an unrestricted free agent. David Blau is a restricted free agent. They still have
and let's
Steven
just,
Montez tucked
can
away
we make
on,
Blau a coach, okay?
Right.
He's not
yeah.
playing.
I mean, it, like, you're right. I mean, yeah.
Jesus Christ. Can we make Blau a coach, okay? He's not, like, let's, I want, when we both, I'm speaking for Chris now, when we say we want to see someone else, it's not Blau. No offense to Blau. Okay, continue. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's fair. I would like to see, and maybe you bring, maybe Blau, like I said, Blau's a restricted free agent. Maybe you bring him back for the summer and just have him around as a number three again, and you bring a young guy to develop. And
yeah, he does a good job with that.
And
yeah,
you let Goff be your starter. Like, I would be fine. I don't know that they would go into next season with Goff and like Malik Willis and nothing else on the roster, because if Goff gets hurt,
yeah, that would be
right.
Rough. Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, I think that you still need one of these like guys around. I mean, Tim Boyle's making $2.4 million this year, so I don't
know. Exactly. Yeah.
Like, I don't think you need something like I think David Blau would be fine in that role. It's like your emergency veteran. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's
totally. Yeah.
That's what you
He'd
do
be
when
better,
you draft
probably,
someone and
in that role.
Go with Goff. Yeah, I mean, the one thing just on the play calling real quick that I think I would like to see develop a little bit from Campbell as he goes forward here is I've been a little surprised now in both Boyle starts, and I know they're trying to just sort of manage everything with him and give him a chance. But the one thing that we saw from him in training camp was that he's a much better athlete on the move than Jared Goff, and they didn't build any of that into the offense either start.
Right.
And so that's like, that's something from a play calling perspective, especially if you're going to draft a guy who's not Goff. Like, if you draft Carson Strong, you can run the exact same stuff I think you run with Goff. But if you draft one of these athletic guys, you know, if you're drafting Sam Howell or Pickett. Right. Like, I think you can do a lot more outside the pocket than they do with Goff. And that's the thing I would have liked to see a little bit more of with Boyle, just to see, like, what can they come up with on 1 week's notice for a guy who can move around a bit. So
maybe that was part of it, you know, that it was just short notice, too. I don't know.
But yeah.
That's a good point.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't know that we've seen – I mean, they like Boyle, but I don't know that we've seen anything from Boyle that, like, he has to be in the room next year, right?
No.
Like, I don't.
I don't think so. I mean, it's been kind of disappointing, to be honest. I think the injury was the injury, but even in, and to be fair, like, I think back to preseason and it was like when they gave him that full game and he got hurt, Campbell actually, and they sucked that day. If everyone remembers right, it was a really rough day, but I think Campbell, if I remember right, he was like, I think Boyle was starting to feel it a little bit in that game. They liked some of the throws he made and then he got hurt. So maybe it was like, it was starting to come, and then he got hurt. But, you know, Camp was bad. Yeah, I wasn't wowed. Yeah, it was bad. I mean, it wasn't good. He didn't make – Goff was better than him.
Well,
Blau was better than him.
We thought Blau was going to be the backup, frankly.
So,
I mean, we thought he had won that backup job.
It's been – you know, and I say disappointing. I didn't expect him to come in here and, like, beat Goff for the job. But, I mean, like, he didn't have enough of those moments in camp where you were like, oh, I understand why he's here. You know what I mean? Like, I understand why they're excited about him or invested in him. There wasn't enough of him. You know, there were some, but it wasn't enough. And then obviously we haven't seen it here in these two starts.
I was a little disappointed. We heard some things from Green Bay.
Yeah, they loved him.
He was going to come in and light it on fire through all of August, and we didn't see that. I mean, he was the only guy in camp that was willing to push the ball down the field. That was that and the athleticism stood out for me, but a lot of it was pretty rough.
Yeah.
I mean, like said, that the backup line, when he was in there, whatever game that was, I was it Indianapolis?
Whatever preseason game it was,
he just got killed. Like, he, every time, like, five-step drops, and there were guys all over him. So, you know, that's always one of the challenges of being the backup quarterback. You got to work with whoever's left at the end of the preseason. Oh. So, but I don't, I mean, I certainly wouldn't go into this offseason thinking, well, they got to get Tim Boyle back. I would think the draft should be the, you figure out who can be just a hold down the fort guy for you, and you look at this draft again, and, you know, we got a couple questions again, like what quarterback fits what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the coaching question too, though, I think, right? Like, I don't know. Like, is this going to be what the offense is? Is this going to be a, I mean, I think it's worth pointing out here too that Dan Campbell was just in a spot where Sean Payton has a coordinator, but he's been the play caller for
forever,
15 years, you know?
Yeah, right.
And so it's entirely possible that this is the setup, you know, that they hire or promote someone to coordinator. Campbell keeps calling the plays, and this is what the offense pretty much looks like with some tweaks here and there.
Yeah, my guess, that's a good point. And I think that that's what it will be. And my guess will be is that it will evolve and it will flow sort of like New Orleans offense does based on whoever's with him at the time. And I think New Orleans right now is kind of going through it. Obviously they're post Drew Brees, and Peyton was with Brees there forever. So I think he's still, and they're doing some weird stuff over there. So Peyton is definitely experimenting right now, but I do think it'll be similar, right? The more we've seen this year, Campbell is absolutely, I think that he's probably learned of himself that he has to be involved in the offense or he won't be able to function. I think that's just sort of his quirk as a head coach, and maybe that's how he's going to do it. And if he goes and hires a coordinator, and like we said, maybe it's somebody already here, like Ben Johnson. Maybe it's Deuce. I don't know. Maybe it's like, and maybe, I don't know if it's Anthony Lynn. I doubt it. That was the one that we were like, it seems like Anthony Lynn would be overqualified to be in that sort of role for much longer. But maybe that would be something that would be cool for someone like Deuce to be in that role, somewhere where he's game planning with Campbell and he's bouncing ideas off him and all this sort of thing. That's the kind of guy I wonder about if he's the, that's the role. That's the person you're looking for, whether it be Deuce or somebody else. But then it makes you think, right, where you're like, do you need an experienced play caller backstop somewhere in there? Like, that can tell you guys, hey, that sounds good, but maybe you should breathe for a minute. I don't know. But this definitely does seem like the run game coordinator, pass game coordinator, Campbell. Right? Like, that seems like what it's going to be. I don't know. I could be wrong, but that's what it feels like.
It does feel like that. And I think part of it is because I really wonder if Campbell went through those first 8 weeks and was just sort of foaming at the mouth because he couldn't really help as much as he wanted to during the game because he couldn't call plays. You know,
100% and, what it was. Yeah.
And so he was just, so we saw him, we'd watch him on the sideline there and he'd just be like pacing back and forth and trying to, you know, poking his head in here and there. But I do wonder if after however many months it was of sort of letting everyone else fill in their roles and run their position groups and everything, if he was like, all right, I need to be more hands-on than I've let myself be. And
yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if he really likes doing it. He's part of the game action again here.
Yeah, I think that he probably went into the year, because all these head coaches that are first-time head coaches, Campbell's actually talked about this, when he was at Miami – as the interim, the biggest thing or regret or whatever that he had afterward was that when he started, he was trying to do everything. He was trying to control everything. And that's something that we hear a lot from first time head coaches, right? I think Bevel actually said something like that, something similar. You know, when you're an interim or whatever, and you're thrust into that job, your first instinct is to just control everything because you trust yourself more than you trust anyone else. And so I think Campbell was probably trying to push himself as far as he could go with the whole I'm going to outsource everything, you know, because he kind of did the collaboration with Holmes, all this stuff. And they do a lot of that. And I think he probably was pushing himself as much as he could. But you're right, I think, Chris, like, probably got to a point where he was like, this is just not me. I don't feel like me here. I need to be in this. Like, I need to be in what we're doing on offense, all like to the level of making sure we have an extra motion in there to give, you know, like that, I think is, that's just him. I think that's his personality. And that, I think, is like Sean Payton. I think that's similar to Sean Payton, who would probably tell you, yeah, I am probably controlling, but also like, like if I get people around me that understand that and understand that I'm not like a psycho about it, like I'm controlling, but like, I want you to be with me and I want your opinion. Like he's got to find the right people. And I think that that's, I think he's got good people here, but I think that that's going to be a process for him too. And he'll probably be a unique coach. I think that's what we're going to see. He'll be different. I think he's going to be different in a lot of ways. I don't know if it's all going to be good, but I definitely think he's going to be different. I think we could say that.
So before we get off the coaching point, we had another question on Twitter from Ed Wood asking, like, I think at this point we're all assuming Anthony Lynn is, I don't think he's going to get fired. I think it's going to be just a mutual parting. You know, like this wasn't,
or I didn't come here job. To be yeah, a right.
run game coordinator. And
right, yeah.
I'm sure they respect him too much to bury him on the coaching depth chart. Mm-hmm. So I think they'll probably split. But is there anyone else? Like, is there any other spot on this roster that you think the Lions might have to replace someone, or they might lose someone, or that hasn't? It's hard for us to get a sense for maybe who hasn't done well with this new regime, but there are some holdovers from the previous regime. So,
Well,
is there anyone you're looking at and thinking that might not be here next year?
Well, we didn't see any interviews from the Jaguars or whatever it was with Aaron Glenn. So at least on that one, it seems they're going to dodge the bullet. But like, I still think he's going to get interviews. I don't know if he's going to get a chance, right? I don't know if someone's going to hire him because of all the base, you know, the lack of experience. But you know, if Aaron Glenn were to be hired, I would bet most of my money that Aubrey Pleasant would be his defensive coordinator. Right, I think, and I wouldn't be shocked if Aubrey Pleasant got a chance to run his own defense somewhere this year. It wouldn't shock me at all. That would be, those two guys on defense are the two that I think about the most. I think I'm not alone there. That, you know, people have seen sort of the way Pleasant, I think, is connected with guys. And while the Lions still have problems in the secondary, you've seen the growth that guys like Jerry Jacobs made, which is ridiculous. And some of the other guys this year that have, you know, even Will Harris has improved, and we've talked to Aubrey several times, and everybody knows his deal and how, you know, intense he can be and how much everybody likes playing for him. Wouldn't surprise me at all. Offensively, you know, I think about some of those other guys too. You know, you think about, you know, he hasn't had anybody here to work with, but I mean, Antoine Rendell knows a lot of people. I don't know. You know, it for some of these guys, I almost wonder, like, they all have connections, and like how much they like it here is gonna probably be, you know, some of what this ends up being. But I think most of these guys do like Dan Campbell, and that's why they came here. And I think for the most part, if it's a tie, you know, if it's this job or another job that's like this, I'll probably keep this job. I think that for the most part, they should be able to keep guys here. But you know, they hired good people, so I think that there are going to be some risks. Is there somebody I'm missing? Do you have anybody else here that you think off the top here that you're like,
no, I mean,
what about Hank Fraley? I mean, that could be one too at some point here that, you know, you wonder about with the offensive line.
I mean, I think, yeah, I mean, he's one that I think that they'll commit to as much as they can
because
he's done such a good job and they wanted and the players wanted him so badly. So I don't know that there is anyone that this is one of those things where it's harder to get a feel for too because we don't get to be around it as much anymore. Like if there's someone who's just like, contributing as the way that Campbell thought he was, I don't know that
like
I have that
there.
Knowledge at the moment.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, I think the big ones, like I think Lynn is probably leaving. I would assume Deuce is staying unless he gets head coaching jobs, which we haven't really heard any of that buzz.
Yeah. That would make sense. Yeah.
I think I said last week, like, the goal for the Lions should be to not lose Glenn and Pleasant the same offseason. So,
they keep one of them for the love of God.
But I do think you're right. I mean, I think at some point here, if Glenn doesn't start getting head coaching offers, I think Aubrey Pleasant will start getting defensive coordinator chances. So, that's
maybe
one
even
about
in college. I don't, Aubrey Pleasant in college would be a fascinating coach. I wouldn't rule that out either.
How would you judge? how some of these other guys on, like Todd Wash on the D-line, Kelvin Shepard's had outside linebackers, Mark DeLeon's inside linebackers, and then Dom Capers is still around and helping out. Like, how do you judge any of those? Is there anyone there that...
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Shepard, actually, because I think he's probably a guy. He would be a guy that I would wonder about if you lost a defensive guy, if Campbell would say, okay, we're going to give Kelvin more more responsibility. Because he's right now, he's just working with the edge guys, right? But like all of their edge guys who've played this year, I mean, go down the list. They've all done stuff, right? Every single guy they've put in there, I think, has played pretty well. And he's been... He's another one, like Pleasant, that guys like a lot, I think. The guys get along with him. He's younger. He's closer to them in age. He played. He was good. Like, he understands how to grind. He knows what this is all about. Like, he's here for it. He's like Dan Campbell, right? He's like, he's a lot like Glenn, and he's a lot like Pleasant, and he's a lot like Campbell and Deuce. Those are the guys that I think of when I think of personality-wise. I think they're all from the same, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're all from the same sort of family. So Shepard would be one that, I don't know if he would... Maybe, because he's another one that's pretty well connected. It's not like, because we talked to him in the summer, and I think he was weighing a couple options, including maybe playing when he took the job in Detroit. So, I don't know. I mean, like, he would be one. I'm not sure. You know, you never know with coaching on who comes up where, but, like, he would be one that I would almost look at as maybe he goes, but also maybe if you lost someone, maybe you could use him in another role. I think that he's another guy that they found that they like a lot. You know, a lot. And it's still really early for him. So it's hard to say.
Well, that's one that you mentioned college for Pleasant. I could see Kelvin Shepard.
Yeah, him too.
And I don't know Kelvin Shepard that well beyond when we've talked to him through the media. But he was, like you said, he just retired like
he's young.
2 years ago. And then he went back and he was the director of player development for LSU for a year. And he played at LSU.
Jesus. Yeah, I think he would do well in college, man.
Like, even just thinking that we were talking about, you know, Michigan for a second there, like,
damn,
Mike McDonald was what, the linebackers coach, right, at Baltimore, and then you know,
and then boom,
winds up D coordinator at Michigan, like, and he was a coach for longer than Shepard's been a coach, but he wasn't a player like Shepard was a player, and so that's like, I could see that sort of transition for him at some point if there isn't a
that's a
clear
new
ladder in the NFL.
That's a new window that might be opening too. That's a good point.
But I think for the most part, this staff should be back, right? I would think.
I think so. And I think the thing I would say to people who are paranoid and freaking out about it is, and, you know, rightly so, Aaron Glenn has been great. And I think we all kind of knew Aaron Glenn would be good. But, like, the thing to remember here is, like, Aaron Glenn was Dan Campbell's number one choice on his assistant list, right? Dan Campbell knows, like, a billion people in football. And they all like him.
Yeah.
Like, okay? Like, so I don't think it's going to be something where it's like, oh, Dan Campbell lost his ace defensive coordinator. He will never be able to hire another one again. Like, it's like, well, Matt Patricia has one friend who happens to be the best defensive, like, and he's screwed, and now he'll never be able to hire. No, that's not what this is. I think that, I don't know that he'd be able to make a replacement that would be of the same caliber. Probably not, because I think we all think Glenn's pretty special, and I think he is. But, like, I think he'd be able to do pretty well, don't you think? Like, I think that his Rolodex seems impressive enough to me that I think he'd have a fighting chance, and he knows enough people, smart people in football, and I think he's the type of guy that would take advice seriously. So I think that I would be interested. I wouldn't be panicked. I would be interested to see what his next move would be. If his next move is a disaster, then, yeah, okay, now we're panicking. But right now, I think that the way the hires he made with the first staff gives me enough sort of belief that if they were to lose a couple of these guys, I would at least give them the benefit of the doubt that they'd be able to do pretty well with replacements. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't be totally in the panic boat on that one just yet, though I do understand, you know, because, you know, damn, Aaron Glenn is really good. And it would be a big deal for them if they could keep him here for like 3 years to see this rebuild through, maybe to at least the first year of them being what they think is, you know, a team that's ready to compete. And maybe that's something that interests Aaron too. We haven't, again, like, I wish we could be in there because I know that we'd be able to sit down with him more too, but hard to get a sense on a lot of that right now.
I think it says something that we're even having these conversations. Yeah. Like, it's a 2-12-1 team, and we're talking about maybe Aaron Glenn gets a job, maybe Aubrey Pleasant gets a D coordinator job, maybe Ben Johnson's ready to be an offensive coordinator. I think coaches, you talk about like looking around at opportunities, other coaches who are trying to climb the ranks are going to notice that. And they're going to mm-hmm. notice how he's brought Deuce in here and said from the day one, like, we want him to be a head coach. That's why he's here. So we're going to help him learn how to be a head coach. And he'll probably leave at some point. Like, I think that they're, if he's calling around and saying, look, we got to, whatever job is about to come open here, like, we need a tight ends coach to because we're bumping our guy up. Like, I think that would.
I think that's how it's going to go. And I don't think Dan Campbell is like the Patricia. And I say Patricia because he was just here, but he's not the only one like this. Like, the, you know, well, he worked with him before, so that's who he's hiring. You know, like, he shared an office with him, so no questions asked. He's hiring this guy or whatever. Like, he played with him before. Like, Campbell. Like we said, I think that his net is pretty wide, and I think that this should be an attractive place to a degree for younger coaches who are looking to sort of prove themselves. Because Campbell's talked so much about the opportunity Sean Payton gave him, you know, to learn. And I think that they made that very clear to every person they interviewed for a staffer job this offseason, and that's why they were able to hire the staff they were able to hire. And when you, I think PFF tweeted out the other day, the Packers, some other playoff team, and the Lions are the three best teams in the league against the spread. Okay? Like, that is not nothing. And teams absolutely will see that. The Lions have gotten growth from a ton of guys this year because they have a good staff.
Right.
And I think that you're probably going to lose some guys, but they did have a good staff to begin with, and it was assembled by Dan Campbell. I don't think we should forget that part of the whole thing either when we look at it.
You're not expecting who was the Texas A&M coach when he was like R.C. Slocum to be the defensive coordinator?
No, probably not. Probably not. But, like, you know, maybe one of those guys. But that's the thing. Like, Campbell's from Texas.
Right.
So I think, like, he knows all these guys from all these Texas colleges, like, know each other in a weird way. Like, I think I kind of figured that out when we were talking to dudes this summer. Like they all have these weird relationships. So the Texans all, they know each other in a weird Texan way that I can't understand. So, yeah, maybe that'll be a connection somewhere.
Now that I say R.C. Slocum's name, I think his son is the, like, associate head coach of Arizona State. Well, so
probably is.
Maybe he will be the defensive coordinator here. All right. So let's, we got a couple more questions we'll hit here before we wrap up. You want to talk about Will Harris or you want to talk about the draft?
Let's talk about the draft.
Receivers. Yeah. Okay. So the draft, a lot of the questions have been about the quarterbacks, which we've sort of touched on a little. But the other one that has come up as the Lions now look like they're going to be picking number two is this Hutchinson versus Thibodeau or is there anyone else here? Like, is one of the quarterbacks going to be in the mix? Is we've talked about Kyle Hamilton a little bit. Everyone else is an offensive lineman. I'm trying to think of who else would even be in that conversation.
Top three. That's for me. That's about it.
Like, I know there's some good, like, I know you've watched Jordan Davis. Jordan's got a couple of defensive linemen. I don't think those guys are going number two.
No,
I don't think like,
I don't even know if Davis is my one on Georgia's defensive line.
Yeah.
I mean, right. Because they're all so good, but yeah, I mean,
I don't think they're going. I mean, maybe they go. Cornerback's the one where I keep saying to myself, I don't think they can take a cornerback. But
no. Yeah, Stingley is good.
Stingley's up there, right?
To me, it's Thibodeau and Hutchinson. Hamilton is the third to me that I would He's the guy that I've looked at and said, like, I mean, you're not gonna, you know, if you had to draft Kyle Hamilton, my God, what a pain that would be. Like, if that would be the worst thing you had to do, then you're still doing pretty well. I think that that's, and I guess Stingley would be one too, but yeah, the corner thing is scaring me probably. Hamilton trumps that one for me because I think he could probably even play corner if you wanted him to. Like, I think he could do anything in the defensive backfield. So those are the three guys that I've looked at right now. Like, we're just starting all this kind of, and we'll get more into it as time goes on, but like, you're not taking a tackle, right? You're not taking Evan Neal. Stingley, we maybe would be the only other guy in that conversation. And I guess, you know, the other thing would be, I guess, Chris, like, if they love Kenny Pickett or something and say, love Kenny Pickett, he's our guy. We think he is the best quarterback that, you know, here, and we're taking him. I don't care. Like, I'm not going to rule that out because maybe it's just me guessing out of the clear blue sky, but I look at the Lions and I see the guy that walks out in that Lions sweatshirt every day, single day, John Dorsey, who did the exact same thing in Cleveland with Mayfield. And I wonder if that's going to be rubbed off here, and if that's, and Helms voted to do that with Goff, right? When they drafted him. I don't know. Like, if it, that's not something that I'm totally ready to shake, but for me, it's still Hutchinson, Thibodeau. And then if you had to take Hamilton, that would still be pretty good. What do you think here? Is there anybody else in the top two for you? Then the Pickett question. I'm asking you the same thing. Like, would you rule that out completely?
I wouldn't rule out Coral from Ole Miss or Pickett. Yeah. I mean, I think those are the only...
Or just Pickett, the idea that it would be a quarterback, I guess.
Right. I mean, I was going to say, like, even Pickett for me, that high is a stretch. Like, Coral's the one, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I could see getting up there. I don't think you're taking, like at Willis or Desmond Ridder or Sam Howell at number two overall. So that's a pretty short conversation at quarterback. And it's really just if you think one of those guys is your, like, if you think Kenny Pickett is the franchise guy, you're not waiting till 26 or wherever the Rams pick is, because he's not going to be there. So I don't know. I mean, the only other position that has crept into my head a little bit, and I don't know that there's a guy that would get up that high, but just knowing that they looked at Ja'Marr Chase last year and knowing that they need, even if they re-sign Josh Reynolds, and I think at this point will re-sign Josh Reynolds.
Yeah, right.
And St. Brown's been ridiculous the last month.
Hines Ward,
You still need like a true number one receiver.
Yep.
And I'm looking at this class, it's a really good receiver class, but I don't know that I can talk myself into Garrett Wilson or Jameson Williams as the number two pick in the draft.
No. But you know what I can do? No, but you know what I can do? I can talk myself into trading down and taking one of those guys.
Right. Yeah, 100%.
And I think that is, you know, depending on how this shakes, like, if they land at one, I don't think I'm trading it. I think I'm taking Hutchinson. That would be my answer today. If they landed at one, I don't think I would trade it. But I don't know. I don't know that I wouldn't. And like, if you're at two or three and somebody else gets a hair there and says, I definitely think that could be something that we all thought last year maybe was the year to do that. Maybe this year's the year to do that. I don't know. Maybe this year's the year to move back and then just be like, oh my God, you have like seven draft picks in this draft all of a sudden that are like guys who can be counted on next year. Like if that's something that they can, you know, these are all things that are still possible. We talked about this the other day. I tweeted it the other day. You know, these guys say a lot of stuff because they have to answer questions. They commit to nothing. Like, I think that all these things that we look at with the draft, and, you know, people were like, Campbell said the other day he hasn't watched a second of college tape all year or whatever. And I'm like, guys, I think he's probably lying. I think he's probably watched a second of college tape or whatever. Like, you know, I don't know. I that's kind of how I look at this whole thing. And I try not to totally erase all possibilities, but yet it's not a draft where there's a ton of options up there at one, right? Like, I just don't think there is.
Yeah, I mean, that's the unfortunate thing. Like, if you're trading it,
It's not going to be a lot of
this isn't going to be one of those hauls where you're setting yourself up for the next 5 years. It'd be like you'd probably get another number one, and but you're probably
trying
to get
a
couple
two
picks, right?
Yeah.
And then I guess, you know, obviously it depends on how far you go back. But I mean, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities by any means that you trade back a little bit, or you come out around one with Hamilton, or you trade back a few spots and take a receiver, and then you get
you got Garrett Wilson or something like that. And then,
And then I think the back,
which would be awesome.
And I think there certainly is like that wherever they land with that Rams pick, I think. There's going to be, I mean, you could get a wide receiver there.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Get an offensive lineman. There's some edge guys. If you don't get Hutchinson or Thibodeau, you could go look at the Purdue kid if he's around, Karlaftis.
He's really good too.
Like if Ojabo goes, Cam Thomas from San Diego State's really, really, I love Cam Thomas. So there's going to be some, like you said, they should come out of this. They've got three picks in the first. 33, 34 right now, as is. They could end up with more, but they should be able to come out of this with some
damn good already.
That help you. And I think the the real question is just where do they fall in love with a quarterback if they fall in love with a quarterback this year? And I don't know. It's really hard to sort of guess at it. I don't know. I mean,
I think that they're probably
there at two and they take Matt Corral.
That's going to be a problem.
It's going to be, there's going to be some people talking. Right,
exactly. But I think the thing to keep in mind, I guess, maybe, is that I don't know yet. And the thing that everybody points to is the old, you know, Holmes telling the Rams folks back in the day, like, if you guys think that this is your guy, then we have to get him. But that's not happening unless you are completely sure this is your guy. Like, you have to be completely sure this is your guy. Like, it can't be, you know, that you need a quarterback today, so you have to, like, they're not there yet.
And the Lions still have the guy he was talking about. I think it's worth pointing out.
So that's neither here nor there. But this
circles us back to Dan Campbell's comment, which I think was what? It was like, I don't see why not, was when he was asked if Goff could be the quarterback moving into the future. I think
it's the same thing they said all along.
Right. I don't know. Do you feel like people have moved more towards acceptance of Goff as the quarterback next year? Like, in the fan base, I guess? Do you feel like there's more of an understanding that this could be okay?
I think that they're, like, more okay with the idea that he could be here next year if they draft another guy or bring another guy in with him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if they... But I don't think they're going to be cool with if it's just Goff and Boyle. Again, and, like, no other... You know, no other indication that there's any sort of, like, plan to look at another... You know, like, that. If that's something that we're sitting here in May talking about... I don't think people are going to be happy with that, but I don't necessarily know that that's going to be the case either. And it's like, you know, yeah, I guess what we don't know too is, you know, what is Holmes' sort of thought on, okay, we don't love one of these quarterbacks enough to take him at one or two, but like there are some guys in this class that we like, and we have five picks in the top 50. Do you maybe reach in the second round for one? Like, maybe that's one that I, you know, I wouldn't rule that out. Like, that's something where I've thought about, you know, do you slip in there and get one before the run on guys happens? Do you use that second pick in the first round, right? Like, to mess around with and take one if they're still sitting there at 30 or something like that. I don't know. So I guess that's the thing that I've tried to keep in mind is they do have the other pick. And there are other things. They don't have to take a quarterback here. They don't have to do anything still. And so unless you really love one, if they take a quarterback up there, it would be, you know, indication to me that they think this guy's the guy, right? Like, no questions asked.
Yeah, it's hard to do the game where you're like, well, we'll just wait till the round three and take a quarterback. Because at some point, someone's going to sneak in and you can't even really
But they can be the team that sneaks in, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
I'm trying to do the math on like when... Because last year there was obviously the big run. There were three straight quarterbacks at the top. Mm-hmm. There were five in the first 15, right? I think Mac Jones was the fifth.
Yeah.
And then nothing until the end of round two. And then there was another little run of, like, it was Kyle Trask, Kellen Mond. Davis Mills has actually been all right.
Yeah.
The Texans was in the early round three. And then, like, the Saints took Ian Book, who...
Jesus.
Not great. Not great on Monday night. But... So I don't know. I mean, that's sort of the thing, like, I'm just trying to, and it's still, we're not even into January yet. It's still kind of early to line this up, but that's more the math I'm trying to do, because I can't get myself to them picking a guy at two, but I'm trying to do the math on where the run on, like, Ritter, Strong,
if
Willis is in there, like, when that's going to happen, if that's going to be late round one, or if they could do that at the top of round two, and I'm not... I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah,
that know
that's
that
what I wonder about, right? Like, and it's like, and if that's what they're looking at, I wonder if they're like, hey, we let's keep an eye on that, see what teams are vibing at, and maybe we can be the team that starts the run or whatever, like gets in front of that wave. If, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if Howell and, you know, Ritter and Pickett even are sitting there longer than you thought they were going to be sitting there, and if there's no obvious... You know, we all know those moments. Like, they could be the team that jumps up and maybe does it. They have the capital to do it, I guess, is what I would say. Not necessarily saying they would do that, but I think that's a possibility still, you know, for them. Just as next year would be a possibility if you love one of those, you know, Stroud or Bryce Young. I still think next year you could load up all your stuff and just be like, here's everything we got. We're going to, well, all we need left is the quarterback. So we're going to go get him. You know, like, I still think you can do that next year. I don't think that that's something we should rule out either.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of thinking down the road, but like, you know, they have a lot of capital. I mean, like, that's not, you know, and if they take this draft, which is still a lot, they have a lot of picks coming to this draft, and they just build a team with it. And then you go into next year and say, like, all right, here's all of our picks, number one. We want Bryce Young. We're going to go get him.
Yeah.
Like the 49ers did with Lance. I mean, you could do that. That's not out of the realm. That's something I thought about the minute they traded Stafford. Like, you know, like, long way to go, a lot to happen before then, but I think we should keep that in there somewhere.
I think if anything has, if anything's changed over the past 4 to 5 weeks, I think it's this idea that they could wait till next year and still have like a top three pick and get a quarterback. Cause I think now the expectation is that they're going to win some games next year.
Yeah.
Now you're talking about picking 10.
Well, yeah, but you'd have 12. To take your entire draft and trade it to a team for one. Yeah. They, like that's what you'd have to, it would have to be like the Jimmy Johnson reverse, like the, you're getting Herschel Walker or whatever and like giving them everything. That's what you'd have to do. But like, that's if you have a team already where you're like, hey, like we like the pieces we have here. We don't necessarily think we need four more in this draft. We only need one more and it's a quarterback. Like you could do that. Like I still think that that's something to look at.
We'll just, our last question I'll answer. I'll try to get to most of these in our mailbag on the site, but this sort of ties into the draft question is what positions do you think they need to really get after in free agency before they get to the draft? And some of that's going to have to depend on who they're re-signing, but where are your two or three priorities as you're looking at this roster right now?
You know, it depends, I guess, on some of it depends on what you like in the draft. But, you know, the more I would say probably corner. You probably need a veteran corner somewhere. Yeah,
I was going to say safety. We've been talking safety about safety would be the other one.
But like safety is the one where it's like you could draft a safety, but I still think you probably need to sign. I would sign and draft a safety, to be honest. I would probably do both. So I would, and corner too. I'd probably sign and draft a corner. Corner safety probably would, if you're going to spend money, like, and I don't know how much they have, but if you're going to like stretch yourself and like splurge on something or whatever, yeah, it would be one of those two. It would be a corner or a safety, I would think. And just somebody that could be a table setter and like a really good, just a good player that if you have to pay him a little bit more, then, you know, whatever, fine. And he's your steady hand back there that can help everybody else kind of come along. That's the guy I would, I don't know who that is. I don't know. Is there somebody off the top of your head that you've been looking at? Because I mean, I know you follow that stuff. Like, is there anybody that's coming open at safety or corner that would be like moderately not moderately priced, but like that would be like that would fit any of those? Or am I too ahead of myself here? Because I guess we don't know.
Might be ahead of yourself. Yeah. I don't know that I've looked at the draft class that closely. I know. I mean, I know there's a couple. Those would be the two. Like,
yeah.
There's a couple, like, I always sort of start with the former Saints. I think PJ Williams and, like, Marcus Williams are both going to be free agents again. Quandre, your boy Quandre is going to be a free agent.
Hey, like, what about Slay? We've talked about Slay 1,000 times. Can they get Slay back here? Would they, like, the Eagles have paid him, right? Like, this is just me. I have no one has told us this. But, like, the Eagles have paid him. Slay got all this money, right?
Yeah.
I guess their Eagles are better now, right? They're winning again. So maybe I was thinking about this when the Eagles sucked and it looked like they were going nowhere. Like maybe the Lions could get Slay off the scrap heap and bring him back here and he could be like their, their swagger captain or something as they kind of grow up. He would love it, I would think. I think Sway would, he'd probably have fun. Like he'd probably play for the staff.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I don't know. Something like that, yeah.
Cornerback is interesting to me because I think we've seen that Aaron Glenn's defense can work with like, anything you give him at cornerback. So
pretty much.
Do you need to go sign a cornerback?
I think you do. I think it doesn't have to be CB. It doesn't have to be like, you don't have to go sign like, you know, a franchise corner. I think you have to go sign like a veteran presence corner, like a guy who can come in here and help your, you know, because if Jacobs is still going to be here, like a guy that can come in here and continue to work with, like they did, like they've done with Anzalone, but a younger guy that you actually like that can play for a longer time. You know, like, I know that seems maybe unicornish, but like, that's what I'm thinking about when I'm thinking there. Like, if you're going to spend money on in a free agent realm, that's where I would spend it.
Yeah.
The rest of it in terms of like future guys that I want, I'm still looking at the draft for that right now. If I'm the Lions, I'm not looking at free agency necessarily. If somebody comes up, fine. but I'm not looking at free agency necessarily as like my answer. I need to find an answer at corner for the next 7 years, and we're going to do it through free agency. No, I would be trying to do that through the draft, if that makes any sense. I don't know if that's the question or whatever, but like that's, I don't know. I have a different opinion of free agency than a lot of people. I know some value it super high. It can get tricky. So like I just tend to sort of, with where they're at right now, I would try to save my money as best I could, to be honest with you.
And I think they're with you. Yeah. I don't think they're going to go spend, they have $45 million. I don't think they're going to go spend $35 million of it. Like I think this is going to be one or two. They might have another year like last year where you maybe bring in a guy in a 2-year contract, a 1-year contract. You're just trying to plug holes while you figure out what you can do with these young guys. I don't think they're.
Right.
Like, I don't know. I don't think they're going out and handing $15 million to Tyrann Mathieu if he hits free agency.
No, and the free agency thing, like the Belichick Patricia free agency plan or whatever, was like based on the thought that Patricia and Quinn told themselves that they knew more about every free agent than every team in the league.
Right.
So they were going to be able to get guys on a discount. That's insane. Like, so no. Yeah, I think that I agree. Like, Lions are probably still looking at the draft and then. But Holmes has said it a bunch. Like, if somebody does, you know, you stack players all year to sort of do your due diligence. And if someone that you love, that you talk about all the time, and we know that these guys all have these players in their heads that they've scouted, that they're like, oh, God, if this guy ever comes open, I'm trading my car for him or whatever. Like, if that guy, you know, comes up and you love him, like, fine. But, like, otherwise, no, stick with the draft.
Right. All right. Well.
I don't know if that guy exists, but there's probably someone out there that got away.
I am positive Aaron Glenn has like three guys that he's like, if you can get me this guy, this guy, and this guy, Von we Bell. Won't give up a point next year. Yeah. I am sure. Because he's talked about, I mean, he's been the one who's talked about it more than anything. Like, I don't think they're married to the prototypes as Matt Patricia was, but whenever you ask Aaron Glenn, like, who's this guy remind you of? He has a very specific answer of, this guy in New Orleans. I had this guy. I saw this guy play this role, and this is what he's going to do for us. So he definitely has
If you give me Cam Jordan and Von Bell, we will shut out every team we play. That's pretty much what Aaron Glenn's going to tell you. Yeah.
So we got, how many? Two left, right? Two left, Seattle. Yeah. And then... Seattle, and then probably Jordan Love for Green Bay in week 18.
Oh boy.
You're heading to Miami Thursday?
Day before. So tomorrow, actually, as we sit here on Wednesday. Unless my flight gets canceled. I see all these flights getting canceled all over the place.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Do you have a backup? Is your backup plan just to stay home?
Yeah, my backup plan would just be to stay home, I guess, at that point. But like, I have the flight situation going down there is just ridiculous. Like, the Delta fares were through the roof. I'm on Southwest. Yeah. I'm connecting. I got to go through Baltimore, and then I think I'm on the way. It's old school. I'm all over the place. It's going to take me, like, a whole day to get down there and then a whole day to get back. But we'll get through it one way or the other. It should be fun. Good game. I'm expecting a good game, Chris. Yeah. I know you're nervous, but I'm expecting a good one.
I'm just soaking it in. I'm feeling fine. Yeah, okay, I think I told you, like, my dad.
Is he nervous?
He's nervous, course.
Yeah.
But he tried to talk me into going down with him, and that's what we were looking at. It was like $1,500 flights, and then he's like, I found a flight. We got to leave at 5 a.m. on Spirit. We got to fly to, like, New Orleans and drive 14 hours. I'm out. I don't want to do any of this. So let me sit on the couch. So I understand the flight difficulties. Man. Have a safe trip. Yeah. Hopefully it is a good game. And I think mostly everyone's just crossing their fingers that neither team has a COVID outbreak in the next 48 hours, right?
That would be great.
One should be fun. So you can get, like I mentioned, Nick just dropped a feature on Cade McNamara, which is up on our site. We've got the deal running $24 for the next 12 months. Gets you a subscription. You can go back and check out. I had, as I mentioned, the Q&A with Vitae and Sewell. I thought was... it was cool to sit down and talk to the two of them.
Really cool, yeah.
They let me in the building to talk to them, which is a win in itself. But those guys seem to have a really good relationships. Sewell seems, I mean, he just is such a really good spot right now. And you can sort of see that development happening, and Vitae's been a big reason why. So you can go check out that Q&A. I had a story last week too, which people might have missed before Christmas. Just I talked to Jared Goff while he was sitting at home on the COVID list about all the stuff he's done off the field, which
yeah, that's cool too.
As I sort of teased it, you know, I know people have their criticisms of him,
yeah, but
on the field, but he's
working.
A really good guy off the field. So that you can go get all those, all the rest of our Lions coverage. We got a ton of stuff lined up for once the season ends. We're going to shift into off-season mode pretty quickly here. So make sure you get the subscription and head over and get the show on the app ad free. Otherwise, you can find us on Spotify, Google, Apple, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And like I said, I'll try to get to as many of these other questions in our mailbag on the site. So thanks for sending those over. Nick, again, Happy New Year. Safe travels.
Absolutely.
Talk to you on the other side of this. And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you soon.